Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Horn. It is the 21st day of September, but, you know, if at this point in the day, no matter where you are on the planet, you haven't figured that out, or depending on where you are on the planet, you haven't figured out that yesterday was the 21st day of September, I don't think I can help you any. But, yeah, it is. And so that helps more on the rerun stream than anything else. And just a quick note about that, there isn't one right now. My sincere apologies, but... the computer gremlin that struck, God, what was it? Yeah, a week ago last Saturday is still unresolved, and consequently, I haven't been able to run a rerun stream, but you know what? We will. I've been trying various and sundry workarounds and still in the middle of some of that. And there should be a rerun stream tonight. Of course, that's assuming that nothing, you know, goes sideways or blows up or... you know how that goes. But anyway, my apologies for those who have tuned in for the rerun stream and not found it. I've had a couple of notes. Hey, Bob, you know, we don't all listen at exactly when you're live. I know that. And everybody doesn't listen by podcast either. Sometimes people just turn on the stream in the middle of the day to see what's going on in case they missed something from the night before. The other thing that... is worth bearing in mind is that there's a program following me now, and that's the Rick Smith Show, live from Pennsylvania, and you have your chance, beginning this week, to be heard as liberals, you know, real, live, honest-to-goodness, dear Jesus liberals. You have the chance to let people hear what liberals sound like who have never heard it before. Because, of course, Rick Smith broadcasts there in central Pennsylvania from what I call behind the scrapple curtain. And they think that liberals are, well, anything but the reasonable, ordinary, normal, everyday Americans that you are. They have a demonized idea of what liberals are that is not even remotely related in common sense, to what we are all about. And so, you know, having that opportunity should be kind of fun. Just remember, watch your language. Rick is broadcasting according to FCC rules and on terrestrial radio, so you don't want to let any of those fun words get out and get loose and get around. We've got a busy night tonight. Just to let you know where things kind of stand in the ongoing attempt to sort of raise it in the rankings. We are now at number 61. Number 61 out of 1,710 entries in voting. We are number 61 at Bourdain Medium Raw, the Bourdain Medium Raw Challenge. Dancing Around the Monolith with a Spoon is the name of the essay. And the winner, and the way, you know, they're a top 10 picked at the end of it, and even the number one winner isn't guaranteed to be in that top 10, but I would say there's probably a pretty good chance they will be. But anyway, the 10 best essays, graded on originality and content and spelling and grammar and the kind of things that publishers look for, the top 10 are then handed off to our friend Mr. Anthony Bourdain, who picks the winner. Pick me, Tony, pick me, over here. Yes, me, please. Because the winner gets published in the paperback version of Medium Raw when it comes out, and there is a $10,000 prize. $10,000! Did I say $10,000 prize? Yes. You know, if you were listening last night, that we kind of hit a wall with the thrifty 250 at the 50 part of 250, and we're looking for the other 200 more in about the next 9 days, 8 days and change now. It's going to be a tall order to get there, but we desperately do need to get there. And frankly, winning this essay would go a long way. It would be a big drop of rain on some mighty parched earth. No kidding. So, you know, that's why I'm doing this. I mean, I love writing and everything. And you know, remember, I can't vote for it. It's all up to you. But, you know, you've gotten 421 votes in there to get the essay to number 61. I bet we can crack the top 50. Cracking the top 10 is going to be kind of hard. But if we got really, really deadly and earnest serious about it, I'll bet we could do that, too. It's all a matter of determination, isn't it? Yeah, exactly. So just to update you on that and update you on our constant struggle to stay on the air fundraising-wise all at the same time. Isn't that nice? Yes. Let's see. Tonight. Or this afternoon. No, that doesn't work as well. Tonight. No. There's some, you know, breaking news about Don't Ask, Don't Tell and the DREAM Act. You know, if you were listening when, back last summer when I was in, it's still summer. I guess is this the end of summer or does summer end in 2 days from now? Who knows? But I was in D.C. for Radio Row at the America's Future Now conference, and you got a chance to hear some about the DREAM Act early on before it really started hitting the radar, so to speak, in a big way. Of course, you know, that's the purpose of the horn is to stay ahead of the curve. Be out there in front of things before they start trending into the sort of attention deficit disorder consciousness of the for-profit media. And the DREAM Act and putting an end to institutionalized bigotry in this country in the form of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, you know, got kneecapped today. So we'll be talking about that. We will also be talking about a little more about, sure, why not? It's fun. Christine, or I like to call her Hypocrisy O'Donnell. We can talk about her some. Other things out there, John Fund. This kind of has to do with Hypocrisy O'Donnell. But do you know who John Fund is? John Fund is a woman beater. Now, he's still got a job, I think, at the Wall Street Journal. But, yeah, he's a woman beater. I learned about that a long time ago from Bart Kopp over at bartkopp.com. John Fund says that Hypocrisy O'Donnell was in the wrong for filing a lawsuit when a place that she worked began on a systematic basis subjecting her to sexual harassment. Here, let me go on the record with something. Let me be abundantly clear. I don't like Christine O'Donnell. Bill Maher says she's a nice chick, but then it... Chick. Oh, God. Chauvinist pig. Yes, that's me. I'm sorry. He says she's nice. But then again, he says that about Anthrax Coulter, too. So, you know, it's sort of... subject to interpretation. Chick. I can't believe I said chick. And what I meant was, you know, she's a nice babe. But anyway, John Fund said that, no, she should have taken it. She should have tolerated what she was subjected to. We'll go into that in a little bit of detail here later. And from the, oh, really? Did you think they were kidding department? Republicans out there looking to shut down veterans' benefits. Yeah, that's in the stack. Oh, I don't think we're going to be hurting for any kind of information, anything, any fruit for discussion this evening. the teabaggers are calling for privatizing veterans' health care, among other things. Oh, it just goes on and on and on. And a little bit later, like after the show later, like after Rick Smith's show some other time, or, you know, if you're a multitasker, you can probably do it during the show, run over to alternet.org. They have headlined the story, Bitter Tales from the Massive White Underclass, in Joe Bajant's Redneck Memoir. Don't know who's in charge of headlines over there, but that's not their best work. It is basically the an excerpt of the introduction to Joe's new book, Rainbow Pie, a Redneck Memoir, which is on its way out, on its way to bookstalls and booksellers somewhere near you. I think it's already out in Australia, quite certain of it, as a matter of fact. I think I may even be a blurb on the back of it. I'm not sure. That's really kind of cool. But this thing deserves a read, and this excerpt deserves a read. You will not... But see, that headline, Bitter Tales from the... No. It's not bitter. It's factual. And if the factiness of it... Oh, Stephen Colbert, eat your heart out. If the factiness of it seems a little bitter, it's... You understand what I'm saying. It's not written bitterly. But you know Joe is a good friend of the program. And you know that we think the world of him, many of us, most of us here in the Horn family. And this is worth your time in going to read it, without a doubt. And the thing is, Joe dares to talk about something that a lot of folks simply won't. And that is the white underclass. Historically, white folks, no matter how poor, no matter how desperate, no matter how miserable, are not supposed to reflect on the fact that they're poor, when they are. No. But Joe does. And I happen to have been privileged to read the galleys of the book. And it is more than a memoir. It is more than social science. It's more than so many, many things. And it, you know, it's not a lot of times we, I have, folks on to talk about books and so forth. We'll have a person on tonight. And I suggest you read things. In this case, with Rainbow Pie, if you ever hope, if you're not a Southerner, and you ever hope to have a grasp on that eternal question of why the South votes the way it does, you got to read this. It's more on the ground reportage than, say, something like What's the Matter with Kansas. This is real reminiscence, and in reading it, my heart just shattered. Remembering things that I saw too briefly as I grew up, especially coming up here to West Virginia, because that's the thing. Rainbow Pie is set in West Virginia, you see. So that's coming up. Also coming up here in just a moment, a conversation with Gene Carper. We'll take a break, and I'll get Gene on the line. Today is National or World Alzheimer's Day. And Gene has done some considerable writing about Alzheimer's and will be joining us momentarily. She was with CNN for quite some time. And she's done a lot of, she's got a book out, 100 Simple Things You Can Do to Prevent Alzheimer's and Age-Related Memory Loss. It's out from Little Brown this month. And these are simple things, and you'll be surprised at what you hear that you can do to stave off this horror of old age. So we'll take a break, and I'll get Ms. Carper on the line, and I think you'll enjoy the conversation. So let's do that. What do you say? I think it's a good idea. In the meantime, just because I didn't get around to it last night, yeah, a little long-distance dedication for Christine O'Donnell. Sure, why not? This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. Head on RadioNetwork.com, and I'm Bob. Minutes past the hour here at the Horn. And as promised just moments ago, I do have on the line with me right now Jean Carper. Jean is a New York Times best-selling author, among other things. She's also former senior medical correspondent for my old employer, CNN, and has, among other things, won the cable industry's coveted and prestigious ACE Award for a series on brain cancer. She has a fascination not only with medicine but with the brain itself, and her new book adds to that storehouse of knowledge which she has gained and contributed. 100 Simple Things You Can Do to Prevent Alzheimer's and Age-Related Memory Loss, and it is out from Little Brown just yesterday, if I'm not mistaken. Jean Carper, thank you very much, and welcome to the program.
Thank you, Bob. Great to be here.
I'm honored. I've seen your work in the past, and truly admired it.
Thank you.
You don't. This is for all that you have done in researching and reporting on the brain and its myriad functions, Jean. This is not merely an academic exercise for you, is it?
No, it isn't. It's a great passion, and I have a personal interest in it because, actually, a few years ago, I discovered by accident that I have a major Alzheimer's gene that makes me about 3 times more likely to get Alzheimer's than an ordinary person. So this really energized me, because I've been a medical writer all my life, to say, I want to get out there and talk to the scientists and read the studies and see what they say, people like me and the entire public could do to prevent Alzheimer's. And that's how the book started.
Well, does it, for those of us, there is, I'm sure, a continuum of knowledge about Alzheimer's that goes from very little knowledge to a great deal of it, sometimes gained in the lessons offered by life's hard knocks when we've had a relative go
right.
through it or something along
right.
those lines. Is it primarily a genetic thing, or is it also environmental?
Well, that is the key question that you have asked here. It is partly genetic. If you get it before age 60, it's very genetic. If you get the symptoms after age 60, it may be genetic or it may not, and it's only a risk factor, and you're more vulnerable if you have certain genes, but it is by no means determined. And what has happened is that now scientists are finding ways to control by environmentally, as you say, things that you can do to hold off Alzheimer's and memory loss as you get older. So you have a lot more control over it than anybody ever thought. So after 60, it's a little bit genetic, but you can do an awful lot to blunt the appearance of these symptoms. Because Alzheimer's, this is all really new stuff. Alzheimer's is not a sudden brain catastrophe. It is very much like heart disease and lung cancer and all the cancers and diabetes. It comes on very slowly. It's a chronic disease of aging that takes maybe 10, 20, 30 years to really become destructive to your memory and to cause dementia and what that they call Alzheimer's. So there is a very long time, just as there is with heart disease and cancer, to try to slow this thing down and stop the symptoms and live a whole life without having these terrible memory destruction as you get older. That's what is entirely new about this. People don't realize that Alzheimer's really is a chronic disease of aging that they can do something about.
Well, what I found fascinating in reading about your new book, 100 Simple Things You Can Do to Prevent Alzheimer's and Age-Related Memory Loss, is that, you know, you're not necessarily talking about, oh, you need this new drug or
right.
Or, you know, some sort of whiz-bang, the gym crack machinery. You're talking about things as simple as drinking apple juice?
Yes, that's one of them, apple juice, or really any kind of juice. There was a great study at Vanderbilt University that found that people who drank a glass of juice only 3 to 4 times a week actually reduced their risk of having Alzheimer's by 76%. That is really phenomenal. It's because the juice has obviously has these antioxidants in there to protect you. And apple juice and apples in particular, eating apples really helps too. They have a kind of effect that is very similar on the brain as the anti-Alzheimer's drug Aricept that you see advertised all over TV. So when you eat an apple, you're getting a little bit of the same kind of benefit from that drug. And you mentioned drugs before. The attempt to find a cure or even a real treatment that attacks the underlying process of Alzheimer's has failed miserably. And so doctors are now saying that preventing it, slowing it down, is the only real weapon that we have to defeat what looks like the coming tsunami of Alzheimer's cases. I mean, it's growing as the baby boomers get older.
And that is frightening in and of itself.
Yes, and it's going to bankrupt our medical care system unless we do something about it. But we can do something about it. If we could only delay the symptoms, but for 5 years, let's say. So if you were going to get Alzheimer's at 75 or 80, you delay it until 85 or so, well, you may not actually see those symptoms develop. And it's estimated that we could save like 1,600,000 people in the next 5 years if we could simply slow down those those symptoms by the kind of stuff that's in my book. I mean, I talked to scientists and I was amazed at how much there really is to do, and some of it, as you pointed out, has to do with diet, some of it has to do with lifestyle, because it is lifestyle, and some has to do with other kinds of diseases. For example, people who have thyroid problems and depression are maybe twice as likely to develop Alzheimer's. So these are all risk factors, many of them that can be treated ahead of time. If you know that it's such a big danger, you really want to do something about it.
And I guess it's always said that exercise is good for any muscle, and that it applies to the brain too, doesn't it?
Well, that was one of the really big surprises to me. Not that exercise, I wasn't surprised that exercise was good for your brain. I was really surprised at how good it is for your brain, and why walking and walking briskly, if you can, is so good. What they find is that when you exercise that way, your brain secretes more of a chemical that actually causes brain cells to grow bigger. So imagine that you put your brain cells in a petri dish and you cover it with this kind of chemical that you're making as you're walking along the street. And that what happens is that they call it Miracle-Gro. I mean, the chemical in your brain is actually called Miracle-Gro by a lot of scientists because it makes brain cells larger. Now, for a long time, people had no idea that you could do something about the size of your brain cells or the size of your brain, but they now know that unless you tend to your brain, it's going to shrink, and it doesn't have to. You can do so many things that are really mentioned in my book, and exercise is quite primary, in giving yourself a bigger brain. You have a bigger brain, a bigger brain cells, better functioning, a better memory, and you're far less likely to get Alzheimer's.
This is all absolutely fascinating, Jean. Let me ask you, going back to the diet and nutrition issues, is there anything to suggest that we are better off with fresh foods as opposed to the processed foods, that sort of thing?
Yes, there's quite a bit, because the fresh foods, definitely all the fresh fruits and vegetables look fantastic. And when you get into some of the processed foods that are high fat, high sugar, and processed to take out a lot of the nutrients, and fast food, for example, it really does increase the risk of having dementia later. And in one large study, people who ate meat were 20% more likely to get Alzheimer's in old age. And people who ate more fish, like three times a week or even once a day, had a reduced risk of 40% of getting Alzheimer's. But just a little bit more on sugar and fat that I found fascinating in the studies, because they do a lot of animal studies, and they study the brains of animals, and they fed them lots of sugar and lots of fat. And these animals, instead of growing up and being smarter, just got dumber and dumber. It's quite amazing what these overdoses of sugar and overdoses of saturated fat and trans fats can do. And studies show that it translates to humans. For example, in a study out of Chicago at Rush University Medical Center, one of the big centers that studies Alzheimer's, people who ate more saturated fat were much more likely to develop Alzheimer's. My recollection is they were about a third more likely to develop Alzheimer's, and eating trans fats was even worse. Those trans fats are in processed food. So when you ask about processed, you get a lot of those trans fats, although they're trying to get them out of the food supply. People were much more apt to get dementia.
So this translates into a million other things that we tend to talk about on this program, Jean, in terms of protecting the food supply, in terms of how we feed our children. And I think you have added another little check mark on the list of good reasons to do things like that. I mean, I I'm not a scientific Luddite by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm extremely bothered by the idea of the fact that soon we will find in our freezers in the grocery store Frankenfish.
Yes, I know. I know. That is very disturbing, isn't it? And especially with a fish like salmon, which is so good for you. I mean, if there is anything that's good for your brain, it's the omega-3 fat in salmon. You can get it in sardines also, which is a really good source. But it is tragic because people have to have this. And this can, the fat in fish can actually be one of the most important things in protecting brains, no matter what age you are, even when you're tiny, and then also when you're older. So we have to be really careful here. What I've done too is there, you can get fish oil, and you can get fish oil that is made from algae, and it's very good. It's called DHA, and it's made, I mentioned it in the book, and they've done studies on it where people take that, and they do much better on memory tests.
You know, I buy my lottery tickets every week, Gene, because one of these days, my hope is to just take a year or so and go and live in the Mediterranean somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
The Mediterranean diet plays a big role in what you've found, doesn't it?
Oh, my goodness, yes. If people who have and eat the Mediterranean diet are about 40% less likely to develop memory loss and dementia as they get older. It seems to be the major good diet. Of course, it includes a lot of olive oil, and recently scientists have found very good properties of olive oil and its effects on the brain, or its benefits, and all the fruits and vegetables, and a little bit of red wine is often in the Mediterranean diet, and I think of all the alcoholic beverages, a little bit of red wine rather than some of the stronger spirits looks better. On the other hand, I have to say that excessive alcohol seems to kill off brain cells, and people who are binge drinkers even a few times in their life can be more susceptible to dementia as they get older. But I had such a good time doing this book because so many things were such a surprise. I just have to throw out a couple of things. One, people should also be careful about the kind of anesthesia they get when they have surgery.
Really?
Because scientists are now finding that a certain kind of anesthesia may bring on dementia and Alzheimer's after surgery. There's a fellow who, a leading scientist, who would not let his mother have a certain kind of anesthesia. That, to me, is fascinating, something everybody should know and talk to their doctor about before they go into surgery, especially if they're older. And another thing is there's the theory that some of Alzheimer's is caused by infections, even common infections.
Well, I noticed I noticed there was a correlation in the information that I had about your book about gum disease.
Yes, gum disease, yes, because of the gum disease is inflammatory, and inflammatory products that you would get, inflammatory chemicals from having gum disease, somehow probably get into your brain, and there is a very strong connection between people who have gum disease and Alzheimer's and loss of memory and dementia. So, but here's the good thing. If you have gum disease and you get it treated, then your risk of Alzheimer's goes down, which is really important. If you have thyroid problems, you are at high risk of Alzheimer's. And if you have it treated, then that risk goes away. So we have lots of other diseases that people have, like depression. If you have serious depression, it doubles your chances of Alzheimer's. But if you can get it treated with therapy and antidepressants, then the risk is considerably reduced. All of these are things that people should know because they are facing more danger than they know, and yet it is treatable and correctable. And people who have eye problems and bad vision, if they don't go to an eye doctor and get this corrected for some reason, their risk of Alzheimer's really goes up amazingly.
You know, some of this seems like it's almost tied to the perception, and I'm just speculating here, seems like it would be, it's tied to the perceptive centers of the brain. Gum disease and taste, eyes and visual processing.
You're totally right about that. And also the nose, one of the first symptoms of Alzheimer's and dementia and memory loss, really, before you get any signs of memory loss, is that you can often lose your sense of smell. And that's all connected somehow.
That's absolute. It makes sense, but it's also kind of surprising. Well, let me ask you this, Gene. If you were going down the list of the 100 things that you have cataloged in your book, is there a number one is there a number one to do list item?
Well, you know, I don't know. I said it's like asking you to name your favorite child. It's really tough. I can't. In the back of the book, I have a kind of summary that tells people essentially what to do. I have a list of 15 foods that they should eat, certainly a certain amount of exercise. If you can do 30 minutes of exercise a day, that is fantastic. I would say that the connections between reducing your chances of Alzheimer's, you need exercise, you need a fairly good diet, some even minor modifications, like drinking juice every day. Anyone can do that. Put cinnamon on a lot of stuff.
Cinnamon.
Vinegar more. Cinnamon. Cinnamon actually lowers your blood sugar and reduces your risk of insulin resistance, and which is all connected to bad memory and poor memory. And
you know, one of the things
vinegar
that I
too.
One of the things that I noticed, and this goes hand in hand with the vinegar, I come from mountain people, and I was, from the time I was tiny, I mean, you tell me that there's turnip greens on the stove for dinner, and you won't have to tell me twice. eating greens and of course the little a little blast of vinegar on those. And that's just joyful. And again, that goes back to that Mediterranean diet. And this is stuff that's available to people. I mean, again, I'm country people. No. Folks don't know that they can go out in their yard if they haven't blasted their yards with herbicide.
Right.
They can go out in their yard, and those dandelions that drive them crazy in their lawn.
Yeah, those greens. Yeah.
Pick them. Pick the dandelions. Rinse them. Cook them. Eat them. You're going to love them.
Yeah. And especially if you put a little vinegar on them.
There. Yeah. Any particular vinegar, white, cider?
Any kind seems to be protective. It's the acidic quality. Actually, lemon juice is pretty good, too. But any kind of vinegar will work from ordinary cider vinegar, balsamic vinegar can be flavored. It really doesn't matter as long as it has.
Oh, I love some balsamic vinegar. I really do.
I do too.
It seems like what you're saying, if I'm processing it correctly, Gene, is that there are things that we can do that take us outside of what can be a very, very scary, especially in this day and age, medical system.
Yes, absolutely. Because if we do all these things, and they do add up, you don't have to do all 100. I don't do 100. You look at it and you say, I want to do these. I want to do 10 of these. I'm going to do them at 20 or whatever. And that all will help. And you may not ever find yourself into this scary medical system you're talking about because you may not have the signs of memory decline. I would be remiss also if I didn't mention some of the social aspects. People have no idea how important it is to interact with other people. That causes actual strengthening of the brain that makes it more able to resist declining memory and dementia and Alzheimer's. And they find that you can have equal damage to your brain. Like I could have a certain amount of damage and somebody else could have same amount of damage to the brain. The one who was more social, did the more stuff, got out there, was upbeat, had a significant other or was married, wasn't lonely, wasn't stressed, was easygoing and upbeat, and conscientious people, all of those are less likely to have declining memory as they get older. It was just phenomenal, all the stuff that I discovered.
You know, that makes me think so much, Gene, about the way that we warehouse, and I can think of no other better word, the way we warehouse our aging populations.
Oh, yes.
When you take a prisoner and put them in solitary confinement and bring them out, their brains have had damage.
The same thing
happens with a person that we've said, well, you know, Granny, it's not safe to be in your own house anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put you in the nursing home. I personally oppose that kind of thing.
Bob, I couldn't agree with you more.
And our elderly population has so much to offer us that I think that one of the takeaways for me, and I can't wait to get my hands on the book, one of the takeaways for me, Gene, is the idea that we need to engage some of these items, like you said, not all, but some, these items that you have mentioned, simply because our elderly population, you know, all the genius of most human civilizations is that they have recognized the acquired wisdom and the value that that has within any culture of their elderly. And we find ourselves here in the earliest parts of the 21st century trying to find ways to not really have our elderly population in the forefront of our cultural existence.
Yes, I agree with you totally. I think we have to really do something serious about that. It is a real tragedy. And it's not only, of course, it's a human tragedy. It's a medical tragedy. It needs to be dealt with.
Well, Gene Carper, I really appreciate you joining us this evening, and thank you for the work that went into this book. Like I said, I can't wait to get to read it myself, and I'm sure it's available at all the major booksellers around the country?
Yes, and of course it's also online at Amazon and Barnes & Noble, so it's easily available there too.
All right, well, I'm already getting a request from our chat room here asking for the ISBN number for the book and so forth, so I have a feeling you've got some new readers in the Horn audience this evening. I wish you all the best in this.
Thank you.
And do continue to spread your message, because I think this is something that can really make a difference, especially with the way that the certain generation is aging in this country.
Oh, I think so too. I think we can keep our memory, and we just need to address a few simple things to do it.
Thank you very much, Gene Carper, and you have a wonderful evening. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Bob. I really enjoyed it.
My pleasure. Bye now. Gene Carper, author of 100 Simple Things You Can Do to Prevent Alzheimer's and Age-Related Memory Loss. This is World Alzheimer's Day, and it is worth spending a few minutes thinking about it. Because the ramifications of it are so upsetting, and they take so much away. Both of my grandmothers suffered dementia. Neither of my grandfathers got old enough to. And like I said, we didn't nursing home my grandmother. And as a result of that, I got to watch pretty much the full impact of it. And just to see what it takes away, because even as a person is alive, what has made them a wonderful, loving member of your family is taken away. And none of us wants to contemplate that for ourselves. And we certainly don't want to contemplate it for our loved ones. So if you are inclined, you can get the book. Not just you can get the book, but hey, you can get the book through the Horn store at headonradionetwork.com. And when you do that, we will get, you know, like 0.052769 cents per copy. It does make a difference. If you want to read this book, I encourage you to please get it through the Horn store at headonradionetwork.com. 100 Simple Things You Can Do to Prevent Alzheimer's and Age-Related Memory Loss from Little Brown by Gene Carper. You know, and it's nice, things like this that, you know, 100 things you can do, it's nice to have around simply because you can thumb through it and say, hey, you know, I'm not eating my greens, or, you know what, I should have that glass of apple juice this week, or coffee. Hey, you know, Java junkies, it's good for you. It's good for your brain, apparently. Unfortunately, most researchers say it's the caffeine that's good for you, so I'm kind of out on that one, because I get near caffeine. And, well, I think, you know, somewhere out in the somewhere in the archives, that one episode of the show exists where Agnes, completely unknowingly, back when she was producing the show, handed me a mug, Barks, B-A-R-Q apostrophe S, Barks brand root beer. Because I have a root beer problem, and I'm powerless over it. And I pounded that root beer down and then went, oh, my God, and looked at the can. And yeah, Barks is the only root beer with caffeine in it. And those were three of the fastest hours of this program that have ever happened. I think I sounded like an auctioneer that night. But, no, there's a number of things you can do, and I encourage you to do them. And with this being World Alzheimer's Day, you'll pardon me if I am, if there is a God I worship, it is the God of irony. Because lo and behold, here on World Alzheimer's Day, and with a discussion of what Alzheimer's means and the function of the brain means and advances in medical science, I was reminded of something. You know, Hypocrisy O'Donnell has also shown up not only on Bill Maher's old show, Politically Incorrect. She also showed up on O'Reilly's show. O'Reilly said, I'm not in the business to injure her. I'm trying to be fair to Christine O'Donnell. She's been on this program a number of times, and there's some kind of crazy stuff that she said. We're not going to play it yet. I don't think it's relevant yet. We'd still like Ms. O'Donnell to come on. Wow, that's blackmail. At least Bill Maher joked about it. But yeah, she has been on the Big Giant Heads program. And let's see, 2002. What did she, 2002. She went on O'Reilly to complain about the television show Friends, saying it was a disservice to society. Now, they were hanging out in a coffee shop. They were doing good for their brains, but it was a disservice to society. Then on another edition of the Big Giant Heads program, back in 2006, she said there was a connection between freak dancing and date rape. Also in 2006, she said on that program that contraception is anti-human. Now, I'm not going to waste a lot of time going into how wrong and idiotic she was about all of these things. Or the comment that Speaker Nancy Pelosi is a false Christian. But my particular favorite came from October of 2007. Oh, how can you not love this? Or maybe it was November of 2007 when she appeared on the O'Reilly show and said, I wish I had the clip. She said, they are doing that here in the United States, talking about animal research. And, you know, the Frankenfish? No, I'm sorry, I oppose it. But to shut down an entire field of science? No, not me, not so much. American scientific companies are crossbreeding humans and animals and coming up with mice with fully functioning human brains, so they're already into this experiment! Really. Mice with fully functioning human brains.
Depths of your ignorance, what is it you want?
You know, I don't know. From the depth, I don't know what it is that they want, but I know what they need. They need a little lesson.
Neocortex frontal lobe. Hippocampus, neural node, right hemisphere. Pons and cortex visual.
Right hand.
Sylvian Fisher pineal, left hemisphere. Cerebellum left, cerebellum right. Synapse hypothalamus, striatum dendrite. Axon fibers, matter gray. Central tegmental pathway, temporal lobe. White core matter, forebrain skull.
Right hand.
Central Fisher Court Spino Parieto. The Amateur, Meningeal Vein, Medulla Oblongata, and Lobe Limbic Microelectrodes. The Brain. That ought to keep the little squirts happy. Yeah.
And there you have it. Once again, proof of what it is the right wing is actually out there paying attention to. Christine O'Donnell saw an episode of Pinky and the Brain and decided that scientists had cloned mice with fully functioning human brains. Yeah, I know how he felt.
Now, what is it you want? In your depths of your ignorance, what is it you want?
They want to take over the world. And you know what? They might. Indeed, they might.
Yes, rosebud frozen peas, full of country goodness and green penis.
We fail to recall just exactly how important the human brain is. And we miss it most. Well, it's like that T-shirt. Of all the things I've lost, I think I miss my mind the most. But it's theirs I miss more. Because it's the right-wing crowd. You know, they don't like health care, remember? They like it when Granny gets the Alzheimer's. They like it. What a sick bunch. To the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Hey, Cossack, what's up?
Not much. How about you?
I'm ashamed of myself for running those Pinky and the Brain clips, but I'll be okay.
Oh, no. Don't. That was well worth it. I do so love Pinky and the Brain for some odd reason.
Well, there's a lot to love there, but by the same token, there's a lot to recognize too, you know?
Yeah.
Whether it's Catch 22 or Dr. Strangelove or now Pinky and the Brain or certain Daffy Duck cartoons. Really, I think the political and cognitive skills of the right wing were formed on Saturday morning.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
And what we all understood was supposed to be funny, they took for gospel serious.
Yeah. Well, you've heard about seen the latest travesty on YouTube, correct?
I didn't know. Well, no.
There's so many of them. Yeah, I know. The SWAT team breaking in, serving a search warrant, bam! First thing they do, within 30 seconds of entering the house, they shoot the family dog.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I know what you're talking about now. Disgusting.
I mean, first of all, Bob, riddle me this. When did it become the right of the police to shoot family pets for no reason? I mean, you're in their territory. They're barking at you. That's their job. Even if they took a chunk out of your leg, that's their job, and you're not supposed to be breaking into houses.
Well, you know what? You can't shoot theirs.
Oh, good. No.
If you should happen to shoot a police dog, they'll spend $1 million on a funeral and bring out guys in kilts and bagpipes for the funeral playing the, you know, Amazing Grace.
Oh, yeah. And
But again, I guess, Cossack, that takes me back to that list of the 13 defining tenets of fascism. Or 13 or 14. I know Malloy did it years and years and years ago. And it's worth remembering because that kind of thing, you know, I mention it flippantly that they'll bring out, I have $1 million funeral for a dog. But, you know, that's the kind of thing that a fascist regime does.
Oh, exactly. Well, and this whole thing, gosh, here we go.
See?
I know I'm gonna get yelled at for this.
No, I'm not gonna yell at you.
But oh no, I know, but I mean people are going to let loose. But I hate to tell you guys, the troops are not heroes. They're not protecting us from anything.
They're victims. They've been victimized.
Yeah. I mean, they're brainwashed. They're duped.
I mean, I only referred to it briefly, but did you see that story in the Washington Post about the murder for sport brigade or team?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
Well, unfortunately, as with the SWAT raid, these people have grown up on these damned video games. To them, this is a video game. Bang, bang, you're dead.
Game over. Put in another quarter.
I mean, it is. I mean, that's the basis of that whole big army experience thing they had up in Philadelphia that caused all the heartburn. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it was basically a huge glorified a video game. And, you know, this is what it's like to be in the Army. This is what it's like to blow people away. Isn't that great? Hey, God. And I'm working on a new piece I'm going to be putting up on the blog relatively soon called Coarsening. And if you think about it, think back to newsreel. I remember watching this on live TV. God help me. but think back to the old newsreel of the civil rights movement. And think back to Martin Luther King's speech at Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
And what was it they said? Judge us by the content of our character.
Not the color of our skins.
Correct. And if you'll notice, everybody...
Which, by the way, in Tom Tomorrow's This Modern World, he said, is about the only quote that right-wingers know that Martin Luther King ever said.
Exactly. But the thing is, think about this. If you look back in the... In the group of officials and dignitaries and so forth. Very nice, neatly dressed, wearing suits. If you look, I'm thinking of a particular incident, I think it was in Selma, where a bunch of these yahoos were punching and kicking and attacking a black journalist who happened to be covering what was going on. That was a story, all right. Yeah, here he is, suit, tie, and everyone wore hats back then, if you remember. I mean, real hats, not baseball caps. I mean, chapeau. And you would take people like that seriously. It's very hard to take someone seriously and have his wearing a pair of chance she could fit three people in, halfway down his rear end, and who cannot speak English, and not because it's not the first language. How have we gotten here? I mean...
Well, you know, you asked that question, and knowing because you were the first person ever to turn me on to Joe Bagent, I immediately thought of you when I read this excerpt from the intro to Joe's new book. Have you seen that over at Alternet today?
Oh God, yeah, oh yeah.
Do you share my notion that they blew the headline?
Oh God, yeah.
Bitter tales from the massive white underclass.
No. This is the real white underclass. This is the world as it is. Well, Chris, I don't know if you happen to see the news articles in rotation up on MSN about, you know, the disaster that is the economy. There's a 57-year-old woman who's been looking for a job for the last 4 years. She was earning $80,000 at Boeing 4 years ago. And she has not been able to find any work at all. And people say, well, you should just take whatever comes your way. You think that if you're working for $24,000 or $26,000, she'd be able to stay alive? I mean, maintain herself?
Odds are long against it.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure she's got rent or mortgage or utility bills. Yeah. Is she supposed to start living in her car?
The Republican Party would say that she is. That's uniquely American, isn't it, Cos?
And will they allow her to park outside their door in the gated community? You see what I mean? I don't know, Bob. I see nothing good down the road. Especially, have you heard that nasty little pig, Ben Stein?
Oh, yeah, and I run screaming for the, you know, yeah, because it's sickening.
Hey, Ben, you want to try living like real people do? Like the vast majority, not like the upper 1% that you are a member of? You know, it really, Bob, and I don't have to tell you this, $1 million makes a difference. Several million dollars.
Yeah, the best way to become a millionaire is start with $999,999.99 and go beg a penny from somebody?
Yeah.
Yeah, Bill, I get it.
You know, and this creep, like the banksters, is moaning, groaning, and bitching about how difficult life is for them. Come on. Bob, they don't know the meaning of the word, difficult. You and I have been there.
No, for them, difficult is having their favorite designer gown in the cleaners.
I know. Just,
yeah, I know, and sometimes the frustration just grabs you by the tongue, and there's nothing left. You're challenged for words. I understand that, Cossack. It's breathtakingly frustrating. And I tell you what, since we're at the top of the hour, I'll go ahead and, my God, you've got them lit up. All six lines are hot. So we'll cruise along, and thanks for getting it started tonight, Cossack.
All right. Thanks to you, Bob.
Hang in there, brother. Bye now.
All right. Bye-bye.
From northern Florida, working behind the lines, as it were, that is the Cossack. Hey, welcome to the program.
My God, you've got them lit up.
Okay, whoever is there needs to turn down their speakers, please. Well, I'm listening to me.
Working behind the lines, as it were. That is the concept.
Okay. We're going to just put that line back on hold, and hopefully whoever is there will turn down their speakers. Nope. Okay. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Radio etiquette with the... Anyway, yeah, that's always a good one.
Yeah, turn down the speakers.
Hey, you know what? You killing me with that Bazit. Are you... Shit, that was sick, man.
That
was sick. I mean, the thing about it that was so startling is the sheer numbers. You know what I mean? The numbers, too. because, you know, I think he's speaking the truth. Mainly because when he talks about that migration, which is always interesting, the best part about that was how he talked about how so many of them were just sort of left at the bottom of that little movement.
Yeah, just we'll pretend that you're not here.
Yeah, and it didn't translate into this huge ballooning middle class that we're always being told. And I always add to that, when the black people came up, you know, we were on our way to outsourcing then. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So, it's just sort of interesting. The number, oh, my God, you know, 60 million. After what we talked about yesterday about the increase in poverty and the 77% of Americans paycheck to paycheck, I mean, that number is not, it's totally realistic.
Well, that's a number that if anybody was paying attention would just make you sweat.
Oh, no, it's more than, it's incredibly disturbing. And, you know, these sort of billionaires who are backing this Tea Party madness, you know, they might be playing with fire. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and but one of the things I found interesting, and you know, like me, you also read the comments. You can't talk about a white underclass, and I don't want to screw this up. I don't want to say this wrong, but you can't talk about a white underclass without somebody from some other group getting pissed off that you're mentioning it.
Oh no, I mean, it was so funny what you wrote to me with someone accusing the whole article of being some KKK recruitment thing.
Yeah, that's nothing. I mean, I'm not an okay man when I read that at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Well, no, but that comment in itself is just really. In fact, the whole thing that was interesting to me about the comment is that what he's talking about relates to, I would say, very few people who read that site. Would we agree with that?
I think so.
So when the comments was coming fast and furious about, yeah, I used to be there, but now I'm here, I'm like, yeah, I know exactly the type of people who, you know, they were like people who, yeah, I have a working class background, you know, I come from trash, black trash, white trash, whatever, and I've made it to this point, and Bajit wrote that shit and touched a few buttons, because some of them people were spouting some truth. I was like, damn, you know. I mean, outside of the touchy liberals who can't relate, the ones who were writing some interesting stuff about, yeah, I've been there, and these bastards who I have to deal with now. I mean, those sort of, you know, class breakdowns that they were giving in the commentary. I mean, I don't know how many you read or if you.
Oh, I read every. I read all 79.
Well, what I'm saying is that there was a few of them talking about. You know, it was interesting because you never hear or read a discussion about inter-class relations, and that's what I found most entertaining with that whole presentation. That's what it brought out.
Well, you know me, Sandra. I can't read something without it reminding me of something else. And again, this was that in reading this, I saw that I remembered that segment, that portion of To Kill a Mockingbird, when Atticus says that the white jury convicted Tom Robinson not because they thought he raped Mayella Ewell, but that because he had the unmitigated temerity to feel sorry for a white woman.
Because
you know that offended all that turned on its ear all the concepts of privilege. You know, one of the reasons we can't talk about a white underclass is because that admits there's a white underclass. And you know, the first rule of underclass is don't talk about underclass.
No, exactly. I mean, and the whole sort of, I mean, which is part of the problem with trying to craft a response to what we're involved in now, is the unwillingness for people to call a spade, you know what I mean? The sort of delusional existence that everyone seems to operate in. So when I read an article like that, it was great because it allowed people to actually write some, you know, just things that seem a little bit more real than the usual, you know, arrogant liberal tendencies that those sites engender, you know? And I don't even mean to say that, because, you know, I appreciate all those sites, but you know what I mean. I mean, because
I love this line from the Bajent piece. He said, true, with the right selection of lefty internet bookmarks, You can find discussions of the white underclass and occasionally even a brief article in the New York Times about some scholarly book that asks, does a white underclass exist in America? And, you know, you can hear the smarmy so-called liberal asking the question. And it's so, I got the sense that there were also a lot of people who were reading this and going, you know, they didn't like it that, that Bagent was touching that sort of, soft underbelly place where it hurts.
Right, exactly. Where the sort of, do nothing, liberal in all its glory. I'm sorry to say, because, looking confused about why they're going buck wild on the right and not able to understand what's going on our side, you know, you might want to read a bit more of Bagent. You know what I'm saying?
I've read this whole book. Like I said, I was fortunate in that Joe was kind enough to ask me to read The Galleys. And it's one of those that's got to be on the shelf because there's got to be some discussion around it. And frankly, I don't give a rat's ass whether the right wing has a discussion about it. But you know what? There are some folks in the professorial classrooms and Berkeley and Chicago and New York and Boston who damned well had better have the conversation, and they better have it with somebody like Joe in the room.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it goes back to, I'm always glibly throwing out about the safety valves in our country. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that always speaks to that because we know black people and other minorities ain't got jack shit in this country. But for the vast majority of whites, there's always been homesteading or whatever, or land grants, the New Deal, on and on and on. And then that's just how that group was taken care of in this country. And so, I just think that it was so appropriate, and I was surprised to see it in alternate, I got to say.
Well, yeah, me too.
it should be something that's examined extensively, but we can't even get them to talk about poverty outside of a day.
Well, no, I mean, that's maybe the seminal statement of it. No, you can't get them to talk if you can get them on that day. You know, when Bagent writes, the foundation of today's white underclass was laid down in the years following World War II. I was there. I grew up during its construction and spent half my life trapped in it. And he notes that when World War II began, 44% of Americans were rural and over half of them farmed for a living. And by 1970, only 5% were on farms. And more than 22 million migrated to urban areas during the post-war period. And then he says, if that migration was to go in reverse, it would be the equivalent of the present populations of New York City, Chicago, Miami, Philadelphia, Boston, and St. Louis moving out into the countryside. We don't think about stuff like that, and I'm grateful that there's a Joe Bagent out there who does.
Well, no, I also appreciated him reminding us of the 4 million poor whites that was existing in antebellum. I was like, hello, you know?
Yeah, because the abolitionists were including them in reasons to strike down slavery.
Right, but see, and that shit don't change because, as he pointed out, that population, you know, just had more kids, and it's just, you know, for him to trace it from that lot. I think is
well, you know, there's an old Italian proverb that says bed is the poor man's opera. And what are poor families going to do but breed? And I don't mean to sound elitist or supercilious, Sandra, because I come from the same class.
Mm.
You know, working class. And you know, it's only because of things like contraception that some don't. And that means that they've got a little bit of something for their progeny. But my God, you know, you've got this freak from Delaware who is probably a felon for stealing from her own campaign funds, and she says that contraception is anti-human?
That situation is more than hilarious just because you know, it's interesting listening to this sort of establishment Republicans freaking out about her. I guess she's the wrong class, right? And the fact that she's using that damn money to support herself. You know what, Bob? What can I say? That shit is hilarious, and I'd be, you know, I'm like, let's hear you criminalize her after the kind of crimes all these other bitches do. I'm sorry to say that. I can't get worked up about Crew and their freak out about what she's doing. To me, it's just straight up gangster.
You know, don't blame baby when baby does what baby saw daddy doing.
Exactly. No, that's what I'm saying. And the sort of indignation that's going on with, you know, these kind of public interest groups. And it's like, whatever. On some levels, I understand what she's doing is illegal, but it's so hard to get wrapped up in the law in the climate we're living in now. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it is. And frankly, if you've got to go all the way down to her campaign finances, That's not gonna resonate with anybody in Delaware.
They don't give a F. That's the thing. I just think that the flip side of the sort of lawless shit that we're going through now is that you're not gonna get people too exercised about this story. I'm telling you.
No, I don't think so. I think you're absolutely correct. But she's you know, our buddy Jim wrote in earlier and said, what was it? That woman has the intelligence of a dial tone. And it almost stopped me in the middle of it all when I saw that, because it is so true. But again, you know, I'm gonna go sideways here for a second, Sandra. Just bear with me. You know, and I'm guilty of it. You know, I'm guilty of the same thing that happens to anybody else that gets behind a microphone. You know, the shiny, sparkly, crazy thing is out there, and I'm inclined to talk about it. But the fact of the matter is, you know what? Did you see the vote tally from that cloture vote on Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the DREAM Act today?
I didn't. What was it?
It was 56 to 40. And cloture lost. So the DREAM Act lost. And ending Don't Ask, Don't Tell lost. Now, of those who voted, 38 of them were Republicans. Here's the fun part. Votes number 39 and 40 that kept cloture from happening, those were Democrats. And so while we're talking about the crazy, shiny, sparkly idiot over here, you know, Christine O'Donnell, every gay person in America and every immigrant's child who is not properly documented, who would like to get a college education and not spend their lives swabbing toilets, who would like to get out of that underclass? They got screwed, not by Republicans, Sandra, but by Democrats.
Well, no, I mean, I saw that both those, you know, is not going to happen. I just thought, yeah, this, you know, it really is so difficult for me to drum up a whole bunch of support for the people in power, Bob. I look at that and I just think, you know, what in the world?
Yeah, and here's the fun part. It was Blanche Lincoln and her colleague from Arkansas, David Pryor. The state of Arkansas put the wood to every gay person in the military and every child of undocumented immigrants in this country.
And so both those two pieces of legislation won't be back again?
Not for the foreseeable future. Now, you know, Harry Reid did what a Senate Majority Leader is supposed to do. I know that sounds funny coming out of my mouth. He turned and voted with the majority at the end. But no, it's, you know, on the prospect of bringing it back, but it's not coming back.
No, but see, I'm telling you, this does wonders, and I'm being sarcastic, for the gay people to vote for the Democrats this time around. I'm telling you, because If that group is not a one-issue group, and I'm not saying that as a criticism, I'm just saying I don't know what the Democrats think they're doing. They could have taken care of that issue, and that would have energized at least that part of the base. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I've never seen anything so inept and ridiculous as the Democratic Party right now. ridiculously.
Is the word you're looking for incompetent?
Oh, I think it is, because that's, you know, that was just a golden opportunity. I don't know. They don't know how to twist arms. I don't know what's happening. But
well, I was a little bit incorrect. The vote was 56 to 43, so Blanche Lincoln and David Pryor were votes 41 and 42.
Oh, so that means all the other Republicans voted in lockstep?
Yep. You know that moderate Susan Collins from Maine?
I was about to say.
And that moderate Olympia Snow from Maine?
I guess not.
Yeah, and you know, Scott Brown was going to be moderate too, right?
Right. Well, don't forget the members of the Republican platform in Maine. We talked about that when that little story busted.
Yes, indeedy.
So somebody could whisper in her ear and say, "You next, honey. Better step right," you know?
And they'll find somebody.
Right, right. No, no, no. I mean, but the thing is, though, this still, if they want to depress their base, keep going. I can't think of anything. They just keep doing it. In the meanwhile, Larry Summers, I hear.
Yeah, I remember when McLean Stevenson had a very short-lived show right after MASH called Hello, Larry. Apparently the sequel is See You Later, Larry.
Okay, but see, don't. The thing about this, though, is if you can even stand to hear this, the White House is so concerned about being anti-business. Can you imagine?
Yeah, because they feel like pinatas. I saw that again.
I'm like, how are they? They have given everything away to their corporate minders, donors, and anything corporate they've capitulated to. So they're thinking about replacing him with some corporate executive.
Oh, no.
And so I'm just like,
hey, maybe they'll offer it to Carly Fiorina.
Oh, you know,
I'm sorry, that was uncalled for. That was.
No, it's just kind of just stunning. I'm thinking, okay, well, yeah, goodbye to him because he's a horror show. But
you're going to get worse.
You know, you're not going to get, anybody useful, like, God forbid, Dean Baker.
Oh, now wouldn't that be nice? That would be nice.
Or Simon Johnson, you know, he's another one.
Yep. But Dean Baker, I guess I've got to say, well, I mean, name dropping. You know, I got to meet the man and interview him once. And, you know, you just it's one of those hem of the garment kind of things. Can I stand a little closer to you and let some of your brains rub off? No, that's Paul Krugman.
Yep. Or, you know, I mean, you know, my ultimate favorite, which would never happen since he was a theater major, would be Max Kaiser. You know, I love me some Max Kaiser because it's like hella funny, his whole presentation. But what he's talking about is deadly serious. But nevertheless, you know, Dean Baker would be a great pick, you know, because he's incredibly serious and he knows his stuff, you know?
Well, indeed. And I can't help wondering, like, with the bill business, Sandra, does this, in a way, does this work into the Democrats' benefit? Do they get to go out and say, you know, listen, we tried to do the right thing. 70-80% of America said they want us to do this. And, you know, 40 Republicans stopped us. Now, you want more of that? That's what you'll get.
I don't really know because, I don't know if it reads that way because all I see with everything that's been going on over the last couple of weeks, it's just incompetence. You know, from the tax thing to this, you know, they're getting twisted and played and backed down by a minority party. And I'm just so sick to death of it.
And that's the next question, Sandra. It might work, what I just mentioned, but it would require them to have the guts to do it.
Yeah, and
But you know, with Blanche Lincoln and David Pryor having cast that vote, especially Blanche Lincoln, I'm sorry, there's a little bit of the mean side of me that goes, hey, how's that sending Bill Clinton down to campaign for Blanche working out now?
Oh, well, you know, please. Clinton was another one who was on the TV recently talking about how, well, the problem with the job situation is a question of skill matching. You know, the gibberish won't stop with these folks.
Skill matching. In other words, You had skills at running a drill press, but they moved the drill press to China. So now we need to. Now you don't have skills to match with the current, the new service global economy, right?
In other words, it's just Bill Clinton trying to cover his ass after us realizing we have had decades upon decades of horrible policy, from trade to financial to anything else. And these people are just covering their asses because it's all coming home to roost. I was like, you need to shut the hell up when I saw that with Bill Clinton. I couldn't even believe it.
You know, when I was getting edumacated last week, we had a presentation from a guy by the name of, I think, Michael Schumann. And I'm going to do my best to get him on the show, because he's talking about, it was another one of those moments when it was like a horn conversation. I told you last night about the bell curve. But this guy was talking about, he was working in acronyms, and he started out his lecture by talking about TINA. And he showed a picture of Margaret Thatcher.
Okay.
Yeah, there is no alternative to the global economy.
And that's another one that keeps on living. But anyway.
And he said, I want to introduce TINA to Lois. And Lois is locally owned import substitution.
Well, you know.
And it works, apparently. They've tried it around the country. And the thing is, I get the, I was sitting there just vibrating. I didn't ask my question. I didn't raise my hand. I was being a good boy. But, quietly afterward, I walked up and said, you know, does this have anything to do with not having a national industrial manufacturing policy? He said, everything!
Oh, good. You're kidding. That's great.
And so I'm going to try to get the guy on the show because it's not as daunting as what it appears, and the numbers out there, Sandra, you would have been just sitting there having kittens with crocheted tails. Because he laid out, all these tax dodge jobs that go out there, we're gonna amalgamated widget is gonna take some tax breaks, and we're gonna bring a factory, and we're gonna make our amalgamated widgets here in Donut Center, and we're gonna bring 3,000 jobs to Donut Center. And, of course, the county commission says, yay, and the local economic development authority says, yay, and they come in, and they bring a few jobs, and the jobs cost about $2,500 in tax breaks per, or something like that. And then 10 years out, they wind up costing $23,000 because of the numbers of jobs that did not stay. Meanwhile, a locally generated job paying similar money, often with better benefits in terms of the tax base to the local economy, costs about $700. You know, it can be done.
That sort of stuff is just stunning in its simplicity. And, you know, the cities and municipalities are just being rolled. Stuff like the Harley-Davidson business.
It's amazing. It's amazing. But meanwhile, instead of talking, we're talking about this kind of stuff on the horn. David in South Carolina tells me that the Republicans down there are being portrayed as heroes for standing up for family values against them homosexuals in the military.
In the meanwhile, the underclass, and they're supposed to be satisfied with victories like this. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
No,
can't make it work, can you?
Well, it's just bizarre because the president's thing yesterday, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the guy was able to break it down. He can break it down. It's amazing because he talked about the 25 hedge fund managers who made $1 billion compared to what other people make in this country, which is about $50,000 on average. So, in his world, in the middle class world, and they can't be bothered to pay a bit more in taxes. Now, I'm like, yes, Obama knows what the hell is going on. It is just bizarre. I don't understand why he can't.
It's like he has to sneak away to say something meaningful for, you know, working class folks.
Well, you know, because it was just like that little, just that statement, just to bring up that these hedge fund people make a billion is enough. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
To keep repeating that over, because I think.
But see, we don't understand that. We don't understand that law of repetition, Sandra. We think if we, you know, it's like being in school. You know, if I say it once, you should get it. If you have to hear it again, you're not paying attention. But you know, everything about human nature says that no, you have to repeat it over and over and over again.
Well, no, and just something like that, to keep repeating that 25 people who earned $1 billion pays 17% taxes. That is all you have to say in different ways over and over again, and people will be like, what the F? You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Because everyone's already tentative about Wall Street. I think anyone who's not under a rock.
Well, aren't the teabaggers mad at Wall Street? I mean, then again, you know, it's Tuesday. They may have been yesterday, but not tomorrow.
Yeah, I don't know what they seem to be co-opted in the worst sort of way. But if we have to be subjected to some weirdo from Wall Street talking about, we're tired of being picked on, you know, that person's out of touch, yet we have to be subjected to that. We could at least get Obama to run that line he did every day until November.
And you just kind of hope that he will. But you do so hoping against hope. You know, bless his heart, Bartkop's page today said, he pointed out some of the quotes that people were handing to Obama yesterday. The woman who said, you know, I'm tired of carrying water for you.
Yeah.
And a couple of the other ones. And he said, you know, and he cited to himself, but there are others, you know, that people have been hollering this for a year. And he has to wait until September of 2010. To have somebody say it to his face? I mean, who's in the cabinet?
It's incredible.
Oh, it's another lovely day in D.C. today, Mr. President. Isn't it lovely?
No, it's incredible, especially when you just sort of, you know, hark back to, I hate to keep bringing up Roosevelt, but I'm always in awe of this dude saying, them people hate me and I welcome it. You see what I mean? Real simple. Yet, it was a landslide after that speech. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And it's just kind of like, yes, you know, it's not going to take much, Obama. The people want to be with you because they hate Wall Street. You see what I mean?
Yeah, give them something to root for.
It's not much to scratch the surface for that to be revealed. I'm telling you, you're not hearing the Masters of the Universe chit-chat 24/7 anymore. I don't know if you've noticed that.
You are. Yes, you're absolutely correct. You know, this line that Bart cites, you're losing the war of sound bites, you're losing the media cycles. You know, what a great opening that would be to explain media to the president.
And in the meantime.
But not so much, you know.
No, but instead we got to hear about people who don't believe in deregulation, who are a part of his administration, and thinking about replacing one horror show with a new, more anonymous horror show. The Larry Summers thing. So, you know, and also I'm suspicious of Elizabeth Warren. I mean, she seems to be.
You want to hope good things for her.
I know, but she doesn't seem to be plugged in. Well, I guess she's an advisor to him. Is that how it is?
Yes. She's supposed to have a direct line to him.
And she's in she's organizing the agency, but probably won't head it. Is that the gist of it?
I don't think that's entirely clear yet.
Oh, okay.
But it was supposed to be, again, that was supposed to be inspiring for us.
Well, no, but what would have been more inspiring, which is what I found out, is that he could have appointed her interim head, and the Senate would have to find someone to replace her, but in the meanwhile, she would still be there until they could get it together.
Right.
But he opted for some other muddle type, Obama-ish type solution, isn't it, though? What he came up with? So typical.
Amazing.
Anyway,
Sandra,
I know you got other people, so.
Yeah, have a great night, and thanks for your thoughts on the Joe Bajant piece. Because,
oh, yeah, no, that was fantastic.
I thought of you and Cossack immediately.
Yeah, I'm glad you sent it to me. Anyway, have a good evening.
All right, take care. Bye now. Sandra calling from California. It's about 25 minutes before the hour. You know what? It's time to take a break. We'll get back to the phone calls lickety split once we have taken a little break. I have to take a break because I'm kind of out of the swing of things. And I'd forgotten this is Tuesday, which is good news because Tuesday means that we get a green news report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen, and I want to make sure that we do that. So if you're on hold, please stay that way. A couple of lines open if you want to jump into the conversation. You are listening, as you know, to America's listener-supported liberal voice. Head on RadioNetwork.com. Learn it, know it, use it. That Contribute tab is at the tab called Contribute. Still looking for folks to round out the thrifty 250, $10 a month. That's less than a penny an hour for the work that goes on here. This is The Horn.
Change the dragon. The water may change the channel. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, September 21st, the first day of autumn, 2010.
Ding dong, the well is dead. Solar panels on the White House. Plus, get ready for Frankenfish, and we don't mean the senator from Minnesota.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Do we ever learn? Are you seeing history spiraling out of control? Do we ever find solutions to these problems? Does it give you hope as you look through this?
No.
Here's Jimmy Carter, cutting to the quick. Well done, Mr. President. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, we played a brief clip from Jimmy Carter last night on The Daily Show. It was a great interview. We'll have it up in full at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. But he talked about having lost hope, that back when he was in the White House, he had successfully cut our foreign oil imports in half, from 8.5 million barrels to 4.3 million barrels. And now we're back up at 11 million barrels, still no energy policy. Even under Barack Obama, we can't seem to get an energy policy in this country.
And remember, President Carter installed solar panels on the White House in the late 70s, and those were then removed by President Reagan.
I remember, yeah.
Now, as professor and environmental activist Bill McKibben of 350.org explained to David Letterman earlier this month, he and a group of his students brought one of those solar panels back to the White House.
We're taking one of those panels back. It's been at the top of Unity College in central Maine for 30 years. We're taking them back down to the White House next week, saying, please, it's time to put these back up.
Right, and what do you think will happen then? Are they going to say, okay, just get in line, or what are they going to say?
I think that they'll probably be eager to do it. Look what happened when Michelle planted the garden, you know?
Well,
the next year,
right.
Seed sales went up 30%.
That's right, but the planting a garden doesn't threaten the oil
that.
And gas that is running this.
There is that.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, Letterman makes a good point there. That was, of course, some weeks ago, and the Obama administration have been offered these solar panels, and they have, of course, put them up on the White House, right?
No, not so much.
What?
They actually, White House staffers declined to even accept the panel, and they also declined to make any commitments and would only say that they are going to study the idea.
Why? What's going on with these people?
Well, what? You know, there is an election coming up.
Oh, and so God forbid we should put solar panels on the White House and set an example for the nation? Oh, Jimmy Carter was right. Have things changed? His short answer, no.
It's official. Over the weekend, retired Admiral Thad Allen, National Incident Commander for the BP oil spill, announced that the broken well in the Gulf of Mexico is finally and officially dead. The Green News Report has obtained exclusive audio of his announcement.
As coroner, I must have her. I thoroughly examined her. And she's not only merely dead, she's really most sincerely dead.
Now, of course, that wasn't actually Admiral Thad Allen, was it?
No, it wasn't.
Okay,
it wasn't really.
The announcement was pretty close.
It was, you know, but hey, it's only 5 months to the day since the Deepwater Horizon exploded, killing 11 workers and ultimately releasing 206 million gallons of oil into the Gulf. Of course, the official death of BP's broken well is small comfort to Gulf Coast residents and businesses after a devastating commercial fishing and summer tourism season. The administrator of BP's $20 billion oil spill claims fund, Kenneth Feinberg, has already apologized for delays in launching the fund due to the sheer volume. He said he overpromised and underdelivered. But if anyone overpromised and underdelivered, it was BP and the oil and gas industry for their inability to respond to any spill, apparently of any size. BP says it has already spent $9.5 billion on cleanup and oil spill response.
There was some remarkable video posted by our friends at Raw Story of an ABC News reporter down in Florida who was disallowed from digging or making sandcastles on the beach because, though the beach appears to be clean down there when he dug below 6 inches, what do you know? Oil throughout the beach. I suspect that's a story that we're going to continue to hear for years and years ahead.
And, of course, BP still has the legal rights to drill into that reservoir again. Anyone want to bet on how long they'll wait? The moratorium on deepwater offshore drilling is set to expire on November 30th, and the federal government announced last week that the moratorium did not adversely affect oil industry jobs, as had been feared. From the agency to Rocky, the largest egg recall in history. Tainted peanut butter and E. coli-infested spinach. It's the Frankenfish.
It's alive!
Get ready for Frankenfish. The Food and Drug Administration is holding hearings on whether to approve transgenic salmon for sale in the U.S. Transgenic salmon is a genetically modified strain of salmon that is not from clones, but rather has had genes from other species inserted into its genome to make it grow faster and bigger. The FDA says the transgenic salmon is safe to eat, but critics say they relied on shoddy science. As foodandwaterwatch.org notes, the FDA is evaluating this salmon not as a food product, but as an animal drug, meaning the company that created it doesn't have to reveal their trade secret.
A plate of transgenic salmon sounds delicious. To read more about that and the stories we didn't get to today, please stop by our website, greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, we always appreciate a donation to help the Green News stay on your mainstream media airwaves. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Is morally, ethically, spiritually, physically, positively, absolutely, undeniably, and reliably dead.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
About 11 minutes before the hour. That's almost Burt Bacharach-like, isn't it? This is the Horn. It's Tuesday. And I just, before I go back to the phones, and you know the number, by the way, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. A breaking story. It was certainly new to me. Our blogger, Texas Betsy, sent this along from one of the great LGBT blogs out there. Called joe.my.god. That's Joe My God, absent the dots. joemygod.blogspot.com. This was posted today. And it was, it's disturbing in the extreme. You know already what happened with the Don't Ask, Don't Tell vote in the Senate. You know that hypocrisy and bigotry have once again won the day in America when a tiny minority of less than 36% of the American people, as represented by 40 Republican senators, held sway over a country that 78% of whom want to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell because they realize that bigotry is wrong. You know, we are, by fits and starts and little bits at a time, we make some progress in this country. But the Luddites and the wombat wrestlers and the freaks are always out there holding us back, you know, trying to drag us back into the ninth century. BCE. Evidence thereof from joemygod.blogspot.com. Under a post entitled, All Faggots Must Die. Joe My God posted about the Don't Ask, Don't Tell cloture vote. A comment, that comment, all faggots must die, was left by Jimmy as opposed to the comment. The IP address resolves to Atlanta, Georgia. The internet service provider is United States Senate. Well, he turned loose the Joe My God internet sleuths. And a Joe My God reader by the name of Sean Chapin says that that comment, all faggots must die, came from the Atlanta office of Senator Johnny Isaacson, Republican member of the Senate of the United States, not the Georgia State Senate, the Senate of the United States, one of two Republicans in Georgia. Sean Chapin said, first I did a whois lookup on the address and found out that it belonged to the United States Senate. Then I did a trace on the IP and got the latitude, longitude, and city location for the IP. Once I had the city, I did a search on Senate offices and started with the one that came out on top, which was Isaacson's. Once I had the address of his office, I pulled up the latitude and longitude info for it and found that it matched those of the IP. You know. Because Johnny Isaacson, he's got him some family values. Updating a second time. Joe notes, okay, this is getting really interesting. According to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the offices of Chambliss, you remember Saxby Chambliss? Saxby Chambliss, who ran for the United States Senate and had him a campaign commercial that morphed Osama bin Laden's face into that of a decorated Vietnam veteran who currently occupied that Senate seat. You know, the one who was blown to pieces by a grenade. Yeah, him. The offices of Saxby Chambliss and Johnny Isaacson are in the same building in Atlanta. So far, no comment from either office. All faggots must die. You know, if this thing actually does go back to either office, that senator, and let's be clear about this because it is 2010, and some of us are struggling mightily against the backward pull to the 9th century BCE of the repiglic and hate-filled, hate-mongering right wing. Let's be clear about this. It's not that the staffer should be fired. That senator should immediately resign. Because, you see, this is institutional stuff. This is institutionalized bigotry. And there is a culture, apparently, inside that office that makes it more than acceptable for a staffer to file postings like, all faggots must die, you see. Let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, Jim.
How are you tonight?
I'm well, I think.
On this first day of fall?
Is it? See, I was a little lost. I didn't know if it was today or the 23rd.
No, it's today. Today's the autumnal equinox. So, all faggots must die comes from one of the senatorial offices in...
Of the senatorial delegation of the state of Georgia, yes.
You know, when are these people going to realize, these proponents of family values, that hate is not a family value?
Yeah, but see, the problem for them, Jim, is it is. because their entire value structure is predicated on hate, whether it be race hate, gender hate, sexuality hate, neighbor. They have descending layers of hatred within their beings that are more complex than anything that Dante ever conceived of in the way of concentric rings of the inferno.
All nine of them. You know, since the inception of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, 13,000 people have been expelled from the military.
Yes.
And what I don't understand is that policy has enabled the Pentagon to spend millions of dollars in the pursuit of these witch hunts, all types of devious means to undermine the credibility of qualified people whose only crime is to serve their country.
Well, here. Consider the case of Major Mike Almy of the Air Force, 13-year veteran of the Air Force. He was relieved of his command of over 200 airmen. His security clearance
was revoked,
and his pay was terminated. And they did that because the Air Force decided to go on a fishing expedition through his email, and they found that he had had a conversation via email with his partner while he was in Iraq, and as a consequence of that, determined that he had, by having that communication, violated Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Because Don't Ask, Don't Tell doesn't just concern the military. It's Don't Ask, Don't Tell outside the military, too. Of course, I'm sure you know that. I mean, you've got better military background than I do. I have none.
I know it quite well, Bob.
And, you know, it boggles the mind, Jim, because morale is one of those things that the military is really quite concerned with. I don't care if the person who is stationed in a faraway and dangerous land is communicating with his mother, his father, his brother, his sister, his wife, his lover, or his maiden auntie. That contact, that morale issue, is critical, and it has downslope effects too, does it not?
Of course, it has a degrading effect upon morale.
And by the way, news breaking again. This coming in from Texas Betsy. Senator Saxby Chambliss's office. The writer Oliver Willis says, I've just gotten off the phone with Atlanta Journal-Constitution political writer Jim Galloway, who says that Senator Saxby Chambliss has confirmed that the all faggots must die comment did indeed come from his Atlanta office.
Well, there you go.
Now let the excuse-making begin. I have disciplined. This is unacceptable. We have a difference of opinion on this here piece of this here piece of legislation, but I cannot accept this. You know the drill, right?
Is that what he said?
No. I'm just predicting. I mean, I've just heard you enough of this. I mean, I've heard enough of this that I imagine you and I both know. Yeah, we know Washington speak.
Oh yeah, and that staffer who's transmitted that email that was traced back to his office through the IP address. I wonder what type of climate has been fostered inside that office that would lead that staffer to transmit such an email.
Well, it's a fostered culture, Jim. That's what I'm getting at. You know, Saxby Chambliss is one of those family values types who stands up and talks about we cannot compromise the viability of our heroic fighting forces over there by allowing them fairies to fight in their tutus.
You know, I'm going to go back to something that we talked about years ago, and it's a book by the same guy, Randy Schiltz, who wrote And the Band Played On.
Mm-hmm.
And the name of the book is Conduct Unbecoming.
Yes.
And when you read that, and you read the individual cases of how these people were treated, prosecuted, and summarily drummed out of the ranks of the military, if you have any compassion, any sense of decency, and I go back to what Welch said to McCarthy back in the 50 hearings again with the Army, had these people no sense of decency? At long last, sir, have you no sense of decency? That same Joseph Welch who played the part of the judge in Anatomy of Murder by Otto Preminger.
Mm-hmm.
Where's that gone? I simply cannot get my head around some of this stuff. But that book, Conduct Unbecoming, if ever there's a must-read for people who would like to understand what the effects of Don't Ask, Don't Tell have done and what has happened this afternoon and the failure of its repeal, well, there it is. It's really a black day. I mean, these people were straining a gnat and swallow a camel. It's just incredible.
Oh, and by the way, another update just coming in, Jim. This is one of those moments where we award me another one of those little prophecy merit badges. U.S. Senator this from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution's Jim Galloway. U.S. Senator Saxby Chambliss confirmed Tuesday that he is investigating whether one of his staffers said it left a threatening slur on an internet discussion of the right of gays and lesbians to serve openly in the U.S. military. Now, here's where I get my merit badge. We have seen the allegations and are moving quickly to understand the facts. This office has not and will not tolerate any activity of the sort alleged. Once we have ascertained whether these claims are true, we will take the appropriate steps, said Chambliss spokeswoman Bronwyn Lance Chester.
I just wonder what steps she's talking about.
Well, they'll fire the person and make sure that they get a nice job in some other Republican staff office.
Exactly. They'll move on to somebody else and say, well, you know, your youthful indiscretion has created a situation which will make your transmission to another office necessary. That type of thing.
Oh, my God, you know the language way too well for any of us, Jim.
Well, that's basically the way they handle that stuff. And, you know, going back to something else that we talked about earlier, I mean, the don't ask, don't tell thing, I expected that. But this O'Donnell woman, now all these people are going nuts about this witchcraft or bitchcraft or whatever you want to call it. I prefer basically when talking about people like Sarah Palin or this O'Donnell woman instead of witchcraft. They ought to call it bitchcraft as far as I'm concerned. I mean, this O'Donnell woman, they have discovered that she has been using her contribution campaign to pay her rent. Now, I know that's not a very glamorous type of law. I mean, for example, if a lawyer worked with me on this, if a lawyer overbills a client deliberately and he puts a stamp on that bill and puts it in the Postal Service, guess what he's in for?
That's mail fraud.
You're talking about 5 years and $10,000 per pop. It ain't glamorous, but it's got teeth.
Well, you know, Al Capone went down for tax evasion, not murder.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, a lot of these things that could undermine some of these people can be created by the services of a very skilled forensic accountant. And by the way, did you hear Sarah Palin's latest pronunciamiento on the teabagger thing?
No. Do we have a new neologism?
No, she didn't say anything. That's the thing. I mean, you know, a Palin is how much nonsense, as I said before, a Palin is a measure of nonsense.
It absolutely is. You own that.
It's the amount of bullshit that you can utter in X number of minutes.
15 seconds.
Whatever. You know, we'll have to go to the Bureau of Weights and Standards about that one, but I have never seen people get up and...
Well, she certainly wasn't tweeting for Christine O'Donnell to reload on that, was she?
No, I don't think so. But, I mean, I would love to see a forensic accountant go into Sarah Palin's expenses.
But let's stop for a minute. Let's do a moment's analysis, please, Jim. When Laura Schlesinger, unprovoked, as if you can provoke that the use of that word, used the N-word epithet 11 times in 5 minutes, was that it? Sarah Palin responded, telling her to reload.
And fire again.
And Christine O'Donnell, on the other hand, there's a clip out that says that she thinks she might have been a witch once upon a time. And you're absolutely right. There is a stunning degree of silence from Wasilla.
Yes, so.
Now, I mean, if you just kind of back up for a second and just look at that. N-word, reload. Witch, silence. We really, really do know. That says a hell of a lot more about Sarah Palin than just about anything else we've heard lately, doesn't it, Jim?
One would think so. One would think so. You know, honestly and truly, in my own personal opinion, the activities of these people, whether they're in office or out of office, has come to the point that we are reaching that Washington and those people who are trying to get into the Forbidden City, and that's what I refer to Washington as now, the Forbidden City, a play with no audience, that is causing so many people, when elections come around, just to stay at home, because that's how they regard it. And the lack of participation of the voters is allowing a small minority to create this tyranny to overcome and overtake our government.
And you know what? They don't even have the ability to carry on a cogent argument in favor of what they do or don't believe, Jim. Marty out in California sent me a link from TPM. This is hilarious. When Crew did announce their findings about Christine O'Donnell's finances that you have remarked upon, do you know how O'Donnell's lawyer responded? She said that the charges were invalid because they had been leveled by a left-wing front group funded by George Soros.
Oh, that's horse shit. Excuse me, that's just horse shit. They have leveled the same charges, the same group, the same watchdog group that's been looking at O'Donnell's finances, and they have a number of Democrats. For example, what's his name in New York?
The governor, Pattison?
No. Chairman of Ways and Means.
Rangel.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
he's having to suffer under the same scrutiny.
Well, it's that communist atheist George Soros. And then she told CNN when CNN asked her about it, O'Donnell said, "Well, why are you listening to a liberal organization in the first place?" This is getting a little nasty.
Oh yeah, it sure is. Go ahead, Bob.
No, no, please.
I think probably 10% of the American populace belongs to the gay the LBG community. Is that about right?
Thereabouts, yeah.
Well, whoever voted for that thing, or voted to kill it, the Democrats particularly, well, they may have just lost 10% of their base.
Well, you see, the reason that David Pryor and Blanche Lincoln did it, remember, that's the entire senatorial contingent from Arkansas.
Right.
They did it because one can argue that Arkansas is probably demographically the same as the rest of the country, which is the same as the rest of the world, 10% gay. But what Arkansas is, and look, I say this as a Southerner, you're a Southerner too. This is not some sort of, up east south bashing. You and I both have love-hate relationships with the lands of our birth.
Yes, we do.
And the fact of the matter is that the Arkansas Senate delegation voted as it did on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, because regardless of whether 10% of Arkansas is gay, 80% of Arkansas is bigoted.
Well, I guess that's the reason they felt they had to vote for it, because they would lose.
But, you know, I'll notice that Bill Clinton, who went down and campaigned for Blanche Lincoln, didn't do any arm twisting on this.
Well, Bill, that, Don't Ask, Don't Tell, guess where it came from?
I know. Well, and truth be told, it wasn't entirely Bill Clinton's doing. Who was that conservative? Sam Nunn.
Yes, Sam Nunn. He used to be chairman of the Armed Services.
And he used to say just crazy stuff about how, you know, he'd rather die than be in the military, have to take a shower with a homo. I know.
I'm not laughing at the gravity of the situation. I'm just laughing at the irony of it. That's what I'm laughing at.
Well, the thing is, anybody who's been in the military, and this may come as a great surprise to many former members of the military, anybody who's in the military who has ever showered in, you know, the presence of other naked people has done so in the presence of naked gay people. Again, it's those statistical demographics just coming back to bite you, and I probably ought to not use that analogy.
Understood.
But isn't that true?
Yeah. I mean, they're trying to make these guys feel so paranoid about this particular change that they're all scared to drop their soap in the shower.
Yeah.
And which is absolutely ridiculous.
Well, and it's not just the military. I mean, I remember the trauma of the first, whether it was, I think it was junior high school. And it's like, Jesus, I'm going to have to shower after PE with a bunch of other naked guys. And it had nothing to do with sexuality. It just had to do with, sort of.
Honesty?
Yes. I'm still a recovering Southern Baptist, Jim. You know, we don't have sex without clothes on. And the light's out and the door's locked.
Well, that's just a bit speaking. And I'm just jumping here. I'm sorry. Excuse me. Give me a little latitude here for levity's sake, okay? There just appears to be a rash of nakedness in this country, and I don't know where it's coming from.
Well, I wish we'd get something put on that rash.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, last week in Covington, Louisiana, this woman got into a cab, stripped off butt naked, and told the cab driver to take her to Michigan. He drove the cab to the police station. She stole the cab and took off.
You know,
And there was another nakedness thing that came out today. I can't remember what it was. I started laughing at it. It was on the internet this morning about somebody had decided to.
Well, you know, those Homer sectionals have probably put it in the water.
No, this doesn't have to do with homosexuals.
Well, it all does. You know, remember, what's his name? President Ahmadinejad jacket over in Iran. He says gay folk cause earthquakes.
Yeah, that's what they used to say in Constantinople during the Middle Ages, that buggery caused earthquakes and things of that nature. But, you know, I just wonder if all the craziness in this country is just coming out, and maybe everybody should just off and just go naked. Maybe. I don't know. I shouldn't have said that. But when I see this stuff coming up, when I pull up my MSN homepage, it seems like every other week, there's this thing about somebody is parading around in the bus. And
yeah, and poor Dennis Quaid and his wife got busted for burglary a couple of nights ago. That was shocking. Or Randy Quaid.
Yeah, what was the problem with them?
Apparently they're broke and don't have anywhere to live. And so they went back and lived in a house that they sold or some such.
That's right.
He really is. He's turning into the character that he played in all those the National Lampoon Vacation movies.
Yeah, he sure is.
Jesus. Hey, Jim, I'm going to roll on.
You take care.
Thanks. You have a good night.
All right.
Bye now. No, you got to understand, even if it's not about sexuality, it's probably gay folks' fault. I hadn't got an email in from Kate up in Montana in the interim. She's got full bars and can actually listen to the show right now. She's not behind a big rock in Arizona anymore. Bad day at Black Rock. She said, thanks for the interview and the heads up about Joe's book as well. She said, regarding vinegar, does the vinegar in Crystal hot sauce count? Hoo-wee! Yes, it does, Kate. Yes, it does. Vinegar, according to Gene Carper, is vinegar, with all due respect to Gertrude Stein. And then she said, faggots and hatred. Don't get your sweet self in a lather. We've been putting up with this crap for freaking ever. Ain't nothing going to change. Y'all need to do your hand-wringing about something that you can change. And that guy who got discharged and outed, least he got to come home in one piece. Kate wins tonight's toaster for the Silver Lining Award. But no, I can't walk away from this issue. And for one, you know, I know Malloy's the same way. I know Rick Smith is the same way. The whole Horn family, John Fox, you know, who just wrote and said, you know, all faggots must die. That translates to wedge my closet door shut. Yeah. But we all feel the same way. Discrimination is evil, and discrimination where it rears its head must be fought. It must be battled. It cannot be accepted. It cannot be tolerated. If for no other reason than the existence of bigotry and discrimination in this country is the negation of everything that this country stands for, the good part that we like to think is worth hanging on to and worth struggling for. I resist the use of the word fighting. You know, the right wing's all about fighting for stuff. Struggle, yes. Fighting implies killing. A good example. There is a group of coal mobsters going around the country. They've got a mobile classroom. Let's see, it was Ron and Raleigh told me about this. He says, you need to keep up with that clean coal technology, Bob. You may have seen our clean coal technology, it works campaign in the past few weeks at state fairs, festivals, baseball and football games, college campuses, diners and town squares near you. Today, in conjunction with this campaign, we are excited to announce that mobile classrooms will be visiting your area as well. Those classrooms on wheels will help educate the public about clean coal technology and its role in providing affordable, reliable electricity, well-paying jobs, and a cleaner environment. Bull! So, in other words, they've got a rolling wagon of stupid. The thing is signed off. Thanks for your support, Scott Barker, on behalf of America's Power Army. Really? An army? Armies exist to conquer. And with conquest comes horror and blood and maiming and sickness and death. Well, maybe these cold thugs probably ought to call themselves an army after all. Yeah, I know. Oh, let's see, about 18 minutes past the hour. You guys are keeping the phones busy tonight. Let's see who we got. Hey, welcome to the program.
All right, Bob, what's going on?
Hey, what's up?
I mean, when your show is on, it is on.
Thanks, Reverbo.
You've been talking about everything that's been spinning around in my head for the last 2 days. I mean, you've had the last two both nights have been superb. Well, Sandra, I mean, how do you follow her as usual? But you just make the best of it. And however, we could start with something, the mouse story about the mouse and the human brain. Well, you probably don't know this, but you know, Michelle Bachmann had that special surgery where her brain and that of Wolverine were separated. Well, the Wolverine brain was transferred into her skull. Anyway, it can be done. It's expensive, but it can be done.
Really? I had her down. Well, she's from Minnesota, though. Wouldn't she be a gopher? Wolverines are from Michigan, and Badgers are from Wisconsin.
Yeah, so probably, let's see, Wisconsin, yeah. Minnesota would be a gopher. So the brain of a gopher was transferred into Michelle Bachmann's dome. Yeah, that's how. Yeah.
Right, and as a result, and this is the important part, Reverbo, as a result, Michelle Bachmann experienced a net increase in her IQ.
It was a measurable increase, yeah, for sure. And the gopher didn't turn out, I don't know. The jury's still out on the gopher, but. God, I don't know.
Well, the gopher's walking around with little headphones on, and it's just a loop that breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out.
The gopher's just pissing off all the other gophers is what's happening. It's not even fair to the gopher. But somehow or other, all my topics, I think, are going to circle around and get all connected like that's never happened before.
Well, you know, with what Jim was talking about, was there any naked short selling on your list?
Hey, we don't make a party out of loving, okay?
Here, here.
Okay. Or they don't, at least. And that's too bad. Maybe they should.
Lights
they
off, clothes on, door locked.
How do you have sex with your clothes on? I always wondered about that.
The zippers are hell.
I don't know if I want to even think about that. But another thing I don't want to think about, well, here's what I'm...
Well, why do you think it was a Baptist who came up with that old idiom, that sure rubs me the wrong way?
Now I can't even remember any of my theories now. God. Look, let's try this. Our identity. I think Jim said something about how he can't even get his head around any of this anymore. And I think all of this has to do with what used to be known as our identity. And I think that's what is totally shot. It's totally gone. And a way to start this is, I think you and Cossack was talking about this, and there was this story about, we have some bad boys in the military right now, and they're giving the USA a real black eye. And I know that taking trophies and all this kind of awful stuff was, people have been doing that ever since there have been wars, right? You know, for the last 20,000 years. And yeah, and this sort of started in Vietnam. But we've never had such an assortment of losers and sadists in the military before this, I don't think. And, you know, and here's Bush and Cheney. We started hearing that word torture all the time. This whole atmosphere of torture. Word that we used to, Americans used to just despise this. Used to just make the hair stand up on your neck, and we started hearing all about the torturing people. And now we have all these. We got some real bad apples in the military. And Bob, people are afraid of us. And I don't remember, the United States didn't stand for this kind of shit before, did it? Ever have an identity, or was that just a phantom? Did that ever exist?
There's an element of it that is, I mean, to be historically truthful, there's an element of that that is our own national myth-making, Reverbo.
Yeah.
But there is also an element of it that is that portion of our national character that Lincoln referred to when he talked about the better angels of our nature. And so it is both true and apocryphal at the same time.
I mean, didn't we stand up for the oppressed? Aren't we the land of the free and the home of the brave?
We like to say we are.
I mean, don't we ridicule and despise like strongmen, you know, banana republics? Don't we classically, you know?
Yeah, you mean when you mean things like when Harry Truman said that he supported Ho Chi Minh's Declaration of Independence from France and it was the right thing to do, or when he refused to get himself involved in a coup attempt against Mohammad Mossadegh in Iran because he was the democratically elected leader of that country, doing the right thing. Yeah, we've done it, but the trick is we don't do it, and I'm sorry to just be so plain about it. We don't do it when Republicans are in office. And now, in the current era, we don't do it when we are scared of Republicans, which is always.
Well, we seem to have just lost. And another thing, and don't you just love it, the whole concept of a strong man? That always made me laugh. You know,
because it was a guy in a wrestling, it always conjured up the image of a guy in a wrestling singlet. With that one little caveman strap over his arm with the wax mustache and the barbells. Right. He's a Caribbean strong man. He lifts pineapples.
You know, the Noriega, it always conjures up the image of like Idi Amin or something. Well, does it conjure up the image of Reverbo, strong man, a ruler of Reverberia?
Yeah, Reverbistan. That's Reverbistan.
Reverbistan. I have my people across the throat with the neck of my Fender Jaguar.
Oh, by the way, you just got a shout-out from Sandra. She said, I love the Cavalcade series.
Oh, well.
And you know, you can probably put Sandra down for a pair of those helium-filled pants, too.
That's for Sandra? But we used to hate, and now we can't wait to turn our own country into a bunch of crazy strong men, and we are a banana republic. I mean, it's not that people, you know, Obama, you know, we've got a new image and a new face and a new look, but it just seems to be the same old actions, and people are afraid of us. People didn't used to be afraid of us like this, but now it's come home, and now Americans are afraid of other Americans, and we're all just paranoid and got this crazy intolerance and this, like you say, this just outright hate. I mean, it is, oh, another ding for you. I'm busting out that story about Senator Chambliss and that clever remark by his staff.
Yeah, that takes some coming up with a rejoinder like all faggots must die.
Well, the great thing about it is this is a true story. I mean, you didn't make this up. This is 2010, and that is a true story. It just happened tonight. And that's what I mean. Our identity seems to just have disappeared. And we used to stand for stuff. We had principles. And now it's all that. Everything's now where Americans are afraid of other Americans. It's not just the world who's afraid of us. We're afraid of each other. And this leads into something else I wanted to talk about, which you were touching on about the underclass. Where the hell does the investment class and Wall Street come off acting oppressed? What the hell is up with that?
Right. Because maybe it's because you and I and the Horn family think in this kind of imagery, but it's like Mr. and Mrs. Howell feeling oppressed over getting cold coffee or cold coconut milk. I don't know.
That's my guy. There's Jim Backus. I mean, correct me if
Lovey, they're oppressing us.
Oh, by the way, I've decided that Jim Backus and James Mason and William F. Buckley are the same person. Think about it.
You never saw them in a room together.
They are the same person. They all, they're James Mason. They, at any rate.
Yes, I understand.
Yeah, and there you have Jim Backus. I think I'm on to something here.
I think you are. And you know what? His first, Jim Backus trivia moment. His first cartoon voiceover role was uncredited. And it's a Bugs Bunny cartoon, and it's a Chuck Jones. And he plays the genie who becomes very, very irate with Bugs. He starts out very, very happy when he gets the lamp. I'm here, I'm here, I'm here. Let the bells ring out and the banners fly. It's too good to be true. You holda, 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 I'm here. Three cheers and a tiger for me. I have won. And he ends up very frustrated because he can't get a bath or have dinner. And he winds up whipping the shit out of Yosemite Sam as a result. It's not Alibaba Bunny. It might be Baghdad Bunny.
You have any idea what year that was?
You know, it'd be the late 40s into the early 50s.
Man. Well, of course, Backus going on to be famous with Mr. Magoo, but...
As you wish, my little bucktooth friend. You know...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Why didn't you send me Sam? She get the shit kicked out of him all the time. That's my opinion.
Well, right. And again, this sort of wraps back to what you're talking about. We've gone from being a nation that thinks of itself as clever and quick and sort of avenging, which is, you know, of course you know this means war. Eh, music hater. Bugs Bunny. To being Yosemite Sam. And downhill, and it's downhill from there to Elmer Fudd.
Oh yeah, avenging—that is the—that is the word. We people would be afraid of us for the because we had principles for the right reasons.
Yeah, because Bugs Bunny is an avenger. Whereas Yosemite Sam just goes around being hostile to people for the of it.
He does. Twenty of the last 30 years, the Republicans have been in charge, and Clinton was no progressive economist himself, right? So 20 of the 30 years.
Well, again, you know, and I know there are those.
Not even a stretch, though. I mean, well, we could give them. Let me finish this real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just don't understand where his wall. The story anymore is that the rich people are starting to feel oppressed. It's like, wait a minute. Didn't we capitulate to lobbies and wealthy interests? Haven't we already done that? Aren't tariffs all gone? Aren't taxes on you people just non-existent?
17%.
I mean, the income gap, I know, still isn't wide enough for you. And the you know, that wall that's, you know, between the have and the have and the have-nots ain't tall enough yet. I know that, and we can keep.
But, you know, sometimes you want to look at the rich and say, look, fellas, into each life some rain must fall.
I mean, Christ, haven't they had enough breaks? Where do they get off with this?
No, that Reverbo, no, they haven't, because this is, listen, when you've got some idiot teabagger who brings in $12,000 a year wearing their, you know, and they're wearing their Dollar General tennis shoes to the to White Stock or whatever. And they're talking about we want them to get our cake or country back. They're not saying anything on their own because they're not capable of doing things on their own. They are repeating the mantra of that class which you are describing. The teabaggers don't want their country back. The people who started the teabaggers want their country back. And they do really, 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 honest to Jesus, think it's their country and the rest of us can pound sand.
But they damn well already have it. That's what I'm...
Not all of it!
No, there's still a little...
They want it all!
9 Ferraris aren't enough. You have to have 10, I guess.
When I was a little... When I was just a little hillbilly, I had a teacher who talked about one of those rich old plantation families. Remember, this is Alabama. And they were from our area. And when old Mars Planter would be asked how rich he wanted to be, or how much, because he was notorious for buying land. How much land do you want? And he looked at somebody and said, I only want to own all the land that borders mine.
It's like that great scene in Key Largo where Bogart is asking Edward G. Robinson, you know, Johnny Rocco, and he's talking, they're reminiscing about Rocco's career, because, of course, Rocco is now trying to get away to Cuba, because otherwise the authorities have finally cut off up with him. Remember that? And Bogart's just something like, so how much do you want, or how, when will you ever, have you ever had enough? And Robinson goes, well, I haven't yet. Guess not. It's like,
see?
Christ, man, when is enough enough?
Yeah.
But I don't know what they seem to have made quite a dent in buying everything, owning everything. We've just become annoying. I mean, the middle class. We want things like job security, you know, and decent wages. We want things like, you know, economic and social mobility, and a little something to retire on after putting in 30 years. And that's just annoying to them.
Hey, can I offer you another one, Reverbo?
Sure.
From one of my favorite films, Chinatown. This is a question posed by Jack Nicholson, you know, Jake, of the character played by John Huston. Ready? Because it's the same thing we're talking about.
Why are you doing it? How much better can you eat? What can you buy that you can't already afford?
Sweet.
That's it.
What does Huston say back?
It's about the things that, if I recall the segmenting correctly, why he's doing it now is because he's working on legacy stuff, namely this.
Politicians, ugly buildings, and whores all get respectable if they last long enough.
God, that was one of the creepiest roles that he ever played.
Oh, she's my sister, she's my daughter. What?
God. Four-star movie, though, but that he was just the creepiest guy. I want to just move over. Into another thing. You were talking about China earlier, and maybe this has something to do with our identity as well. Get this. I'm listening to NPR the other day, and there's two references to China that this just astonished me. One is they were. It was a story about, I don't know, pollution or something. I don't know where they were going with this, but the announcer says, well, China, you know, since they've been, China is a leader in greenhouse gas emissions. And I thought to myself, is that just another way of saying they're like one of the worst atmospheric polluters on the planet?
And yes.
But they phrased it like they were really cool. Wow, they're a leader in greenhouse gas emissions. Can you believe?
Well, you know, Don Blankenship wants to close the greenhouse gas gap. We cannot have a greenhouse gas gap.
We cannot afford a greenhouse gas gap. But so we've got NPR referring to this just this like crappy thing they're doing.
Yeah, it's like, well, they're a global leader in widget production.
Well, they're a leader in poisoning people. Wow, that's. And so then I was listening to a story about GM, and evidently China is thinking about buying some serious amounts of shares in General Motors. Have you heard about this?
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know why that is? I think their Chrysler deal went bust. You did know there was a Chrysler deal, right?
No, but what I also didn't know, and I guess this shouldn't surprise me, was evidently General Motors sells more cars in China than they do here.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said that GM has already moved all of their advanced R&D requirements over to Chinese research labs. And so it started to occur to me that China has become this sacred cow, that we are now celebrating. That this is a self-fulfilled prophecy.
Well, you see, but we can't dare not celebrate them because, again, they hold the hot checks that we told them would be absolutely for sure good next week.
Pretty much. And they're selling China, and this is just was bound to happen. Where, you know, how the 20th century was the, what, century of the United States. And the 21st is going to be the century of China, and then they're just selling this to us like it's just preordained, and we're just supposed to be celebrating it. And I'm thinking, oh, that's nice. So all these kids who are going to school at Caltech and MIT, who in advanced R&D, I guess they're not going to be getting a job anytime soon.
In America.
Yeah. But that's great.
Well, this is, and this is enough. This, you know how John Fox asked last night where the teabaggers are, or where they were back when Bush was spying on, you know, PETA?
Sure.
Well, here's another one. Where were the teabaggers when we now know? I'm trying to formulate this here. Where are the teabaggers about China trade policy? Because see, you can't. They're all about Merca, but their Mercan flag T-shirts come from the Honduras, and their Mercan flags come from China, and their yeller support the troops magnetic ribbon magnets that are on the back of their big old gas guzzling SUVs, whose fuel comes from God knows where. Well, their magnets come from China, too. But they're for Merca, and they're patriots and pride. They got some pride.
Well, that's just not in the script they were given, that's all.
Right, because, and I'm the one looping this time. I'm looping back to what I said earlier. It ain't in the script, Reverbo, because that ain't the America that the people who own the teabaggers want back. Because again, labor's a pain in the wealthy's ass.
Oh, it is.
And just like tax cuts, if you're paying 17%, you know what? You'll turn this country upside down to pay 16. And you don't care if blood runs as high as a kneecap in the streets to do it. And by the same token, if you're that class, you will also sell this country out for pennies on the dollar to the Chinese if it means that you get to pay somebody a dollar a day instead of nine an hour.
Oh yeah. And the nail in the coffin is when our legislators just hang that sign outside all their doors saying, you know, we're for sale. Booker's here.
Yeah, and your experience may vary.
I think I emailed you a short one last night too, where they were talking about how this all started in the 70s. And pretty much, I think that the conservatives had made up their mind that we weren't going to have this mess like in Vietnam anymore, and they just got this whole plan together and got all this money together and just made this incredible power grab, which of course you can't cheat an honest man, but that ship has sailed a long time.
Right, but the thing is, to the extent that it goes back to the Nixon administration, the Powell memo, the Goldwater dream. Hell, it may go back to Dewey. It certainly goes back to Coolidge and Harding and Hoover. You know,
it's a time machine now. We are
right.
Headed back to
But again, it's that generational thing I keep talking about. This, none of this, the teabagger phenomenon, the right wing desire to completely recast the United States of America in the image of the rich themselves. There's not a damn bit of this that's new. We only think it's new because we don't have that good a grasp on history. You know, that's one of the things that Bagent is talking about. You know, this is not new. Screw the poor people. Screw the underclass. Has been the hell with croquet on the lawns at Kenny Bunkport, Reverbo. That's been the national pastime of the wealthy since the day this country was founded.
Pretty much.
You know, Joe can't talk about the underclass without somebody saying, this sounds like KKK recruiting. You know, moron. But that moron doesn't understand that, you know, there was African slavery going on, but African slavery came about because it turned out that the native peoples here were no good at slaves and would sit down and die instead of be enslaved. So they started, the Portuguese said, hey, you know, we just found some really dark people. I think we can steal them. You want to buy some? And the Dutch said, only if it's a bargain. And the English said, whatever the Dutch are paying for, we'll pay them on the markup. And the Spanish said, we're the ones whose the Indians are dying on our watch. Can't we buy some too? And they called them Moros. And that's how you get African slavery in America. Meantime, the labor shortage over here is so desperate, and this is all in Howard Zinn. The labor shortage is desperate enough, and Mary Oldie Engeland is shitty enough, that people are selling themselves into slavery in the old country to be brought over here. The problem was you get the white slaves over here working next to the black slaves over here working next to the and they're both running away to the Indian settlements because the Indians are treating them like white people. Dover said, you know what? We got to figure out a way to make the white people hate the black people and make everybody hate the Indians. Wait a minute. We'll tell them it's about God, and if that doesn't work, we'll tell them it's about sex. And well, hell, we'll tell them that white people, and then it just turns into Dr. Seuss with the Sneetches. Stars upon their thars, and some with no stars upon thars. And the next thing you know, you've got 400 years of race war in this country. And all the while, the poor schmucks, Reverbo, who are all taking it in the shorts, don't realize that who's giving it to them. They think it's because the black man's going to get my white women's, or the poor whites are keeping me down, and the Indians are just still sitting there going, what the?
I mean, that's
fairly succinct, isn't it?
No, it's like a Twilight Zone episode. It's like a Fire Sign Theater album. It's you can't. Well, as long as you keep people, it's sad that people will buy shit like this. Because, I mean, all these people, you know the people that, while you were in class, you know, there was always a bunch of guys, a bunch of dudes, you know, smoking cigarettes out in the parking lot when they should have been in class. Well, that's the teabaggers. Evidently, they'll, you know, because if you even have the tiniest bit of smarts.
But again, that movie I mentioned last night, it's so breathtaking. Everybody's got to see this. Agora. The stupid tore down 3,000 years of civilization in Alexandria. And they did it for Jebus. And they hated those 3,000 years of civilization because they were actually trying to understand the world they lived in. And they had developed this nascent art, science, whatever, called history. And they were examining how the spheres moved in the firmament. And the new religion came along and said, you don't need none of that, and what you need is to die, heretic. And the next thing you know, 3,000 years worth of knowledge is going up in a marshmallow roast.
Did the Alexandria Library go up in the same roast?
Yes, the Christians burned it.
Sweet. You're right. They did it with God, and if that didn't work, they did it with sex, and if that didn't work, they do it with, the black guy's going to take your job. They just did it at the lowest level of the lizard brain at the pond.
Exactly.
They knew how to do it, and they knew it would work.
And that's, you know, kind of grim and sad business, but at least, Reverbo, in talking about this amongst ourselves, we arm ourselves, not with guns, not with knives, rocks, or anything else, but with the only thing that's ever actually saved humanity. Knowledge. Knowledge.
That's it. And it's easy to be a little lazy and careless and just think in terms of, you know, since 1980. But Bajan's right, and so are you. This is the battle that's been being waged really forever.
Yes. This is the battle we started fighting when we came down out of the trees.
Yeah, Yeah, that's far back. I agree.
This is Monkey Meets Monolith.
Yep. And it's going to be the battle that where I got that make it personal line. It's going to be evidently a battle 1,000 years from now.
For the poor ye have always with ye.
Well, enjoyed this conversation.
You have been far too much of a stranger, my friend.
Well, I have other duties, as you know, and but yeah, I kind of missed called it lately. It was just
And sometimes you get sometimes when you're up toddling around the Chesapeake Bay in that airship, yeah, I'm sure you get out of range of the wireless.
Yeah, I got some pretty high tech equipment on that.
Then it's all Galaxy Girl, isn't it? I know how it is. You get hooked, and you just can't walk away.
I'm addicted to it. What can I say? Anyway, all right. Well, you got time for another call, man.
All right. We'll talk to you later, Riverbo.
I'll make it personal, as usual.
Amen to that. Bye now.
All right. Bye.
Cavalcade of crazy columnists at headonradionetwork.com. That is the one and only Riverbo. Did you go and read sections of Looking for Work in a Cavalcade of Crazy? Like Sandra says, that's some amazing stuff. Again, you're not going to read that out there on the interweb tubes. It's just not there. But it's on the horn. Another reason to realize why what happens here is so doggone special. Just checking buttons here. And you know what? You all gave up. I guess you'll have that. Just a little bit ago, just for the hell of it, I tweeted, will any member of the for-profit media do the right thing and call for Saxby Chambliss' resignation? And if not, why not? Well, because they're for-profit. Let it be noted that this program has called for the resignation of Saxby Chambliss, because When All Faggots Must Die appears coming from your office, you know what? You've created a culture where someone feels empowered to write that sort of thing, to type that sort of filth. And sooner or later, we have to start talking about accountability. Not the BS accountability that the right wing likes to talk about when they're making fun of the fact that, you know, we don't deserve health care. But the kind of accountability that doesn't let threats of murder go unaccounted for by the person in charge. You know, there's a whole line of English and Anglo-American common law called respondeat superior. Let the master respond. Let the superior respond. And it says that in cases of torts, in civil matters, that the boss is responsible for the actions of the employee. Well, Saxby Chambliss, respondeat superior. You know? Yeah. So another reminder before I go away for the evening and before Rick Smith comes along. If you wouldn't mind, get on over and vote for my my essay at Bourdain, B-O-U-R-D-A-I-N, mediumraw.com. Just look in the find and entry search box, just type monolith. And you can vote with your Facebook account or with an entirely separate account. It's easy any way you want to. And golly, I sure would appreciate it. Because, you know, every little bit helps. Every little bit helps. And speaking of every little bit helping, those $10 a month members, those $10 a month members of the Thrifty 250, or 20, or whatever you can afford, are what keeps all of this going. Month in and month out. And we're about 50, 51, 55 maybe, $10 and more donate. Everybody hasn't given 10. Some have given 20. Some have given 50. Some have given significantly more than that, and it is much appreciated. But it is what helps keep things going. And again, you know, if we could get those 250 people, well, anybody who agrees to go in for $10 a month, the hourly rate, and we've spent so much time on this program tonight talking about labor and about income inequities. Do you know anybody else out there that would work for somewhere between 1 cent and 5 cent per, 5 cents per hour? Well, that's what happens when you say I'm good for 10 bucks every month to the horn. All the work that it takes to make all this happen between me, John Fox, Ben Birch, everybody who contributes to making the horn go, it works out to somewhere between a penny and a nickel an hour. Can you get that kind of a rate out of watching an hour of television on your cable service? Does even your internet, which you've got to have in order to hear this show, even your internet, does that work out to a penny an hour? I don't think so. Not by a long shot. And I'm so proud that this matters to you all. Because it's such an honor for me. And I thank you all so very much. And when the month ends, we're going to put up first names only. No locations, no last names. We'll put up the Thrifty 250 or the Thrifty 50 or the Thrifty 60 or whatever it is we manage to reach. And maybe it'll keep things going. So it's about 5 minutes before the hour, 4 minutes before, 3 minutes before the hour, and it means I got to get out of here. There's one last call has come in, but I can't get to it because I got to get out of here and let Rick Smith get started. Man, I want you guys, remember, watch your language, but I want you calling in and talking to those all those folks behind the scrapple curtain who've never heard liberals before. Thanks to everybody who does make all this happen. John Fox is our chief engineer, webmaster, web designer. All things, well, most all things to me in moments of crisis. We've had streaming problems lately because of a sick computer that, you know, frankly, we can't afford to replace. And when there's money to do it, I'll buy the things that are necessary to get it fixed and running again. Until then, catch as catch can. But thank you, John, for all you do, especially as you get ready to go out on the road. If you're not already out on the road, I think you might be. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk. My God, that's not an exaggeration. Ben, there is liberal internet radio solely and exclusively because of Ben Birch, because in 2002 he decided that it simply had to exist and the other side couldn't be allowed to simply rule every aspect of the conversation. And that's how the White Rose Society was born, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to our chat room moderator, Lottie, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Susan, do please tell Donald we're still rooting for him to get to feeling ever so much better. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. She did great work this evening bringing the All Faggots Must Die story to us in a prompt and timely manner. Matt Osborne at OsborneInc.com is our Southeast correspondent. Also working at Crooks and Liars now. Look for his stuff at Crooks and Liars. He does amazing. He's a hell of a writer. My head writer is David in Tennessee. All of this also happens because of the continuing commitment of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. They are the hardest working, bravest people I know. Don't forget to check out AppalachiaRising.org. That's where I'm going to be first of next week. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.